Hi guys, it's Ali here with We Are The Girls In Claret And Blue. I have kicked Reece out. He's had his own fun with all of his boy mates, and so I'm doing a girls only podcast. So I'm joined with regular contributor Emma from the Man City fan cast. How you doing, Emma?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Not too bad. I have to tell you the truth. I did mute you yesterday because I did not want to relive the FA Cup final.
Yeah, we just had a bit of fun. It was good, though.
No, yeah, I'm sure as a Man City fan, it was a great game to relive.
You could have watched the first 45 minutes at least.
Yeah, I just keep watching Rossi's miss and I was just like...
Oh, it is painful.
Almost. I was behind the goal at that time and I was just like, Rossi, what are you doing? But always a pleasure to have you. And we've got a brand new guest who we've been waiting for weeks to get on, and then we had the shutdown and we didn't know what we were going to talk about. So I've nabbed us a Reece Carp. We've got Helen Hardy, who does many podcasts, but I'm obsessed at the moment with the It's Not Soccer podcast. So welcome, Helen.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
That time.
Exactly. It's been so long since we asked you, and then here we are.
Finally made it on, finally.
Absolutely. So do you want to tell the guys like what your new podcast is about and a little bit about yourself so that our fans can get to know you?
Sure thing. So I present a podcast about the NWSL, which now in hindsight isn't going ahead. So for this season, they've already postponed it. So I don't know what we'll talk about, but we'll find something. I present it with Hannah, who is an NWSL. She just knows everything. She's just like the encyclopedia of the NWSL, which is the American Soccer League. And I'm kind of a bit of a newbie to it. I've started following it over the last couple of years. So she kind of helps me kind of learn a little bit more about the league, and we kind of explain a lot for the British listeners, but also it's really good for American listeners too, who are massive fans of the league. We kind of fill them in on new gossip and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's really good fun. And we're up to, we're done episode one, but we've done a couple of bonus episodes because obviously we haven't got a league to talk about. So we're just filling in at the moment.
So have you got a team over in the NWSL, or are you just being a newbie and following everybody?
Well, I have a bit of a thing for Tobin Heath, so don't we all? So I follow the Portland Thorns. I started following them beginning of last season, but to be honest, I think it's similar to WSL. Emma and I have actually done a podcast together, so Emma knows I'm a secret closet Man City fan for the women's team, but I'm actually a Geordie, so I'm a Newcastle United fan. They don't have
many teams.
They don't really. I just basically, I'm a glory hunter.
Glory hunter.
I really, come on, I've followed Newcastle all my life. Give a girl a chance, do you know what I mean?
I was like that. When West Ham didn't have a women's team that I could follow, I followed Man City for a couple of seasons because I'm based up in the north. And then as soon as West Ham got a team, I was like, I can't do it. I can't, like, betray my club.
If Newcastle made it into like WSL2, I'd definitely go mega on that. But with our current ownership, there's absolutely no signs of us becoming even semi-professional. So it's really difficult. I have actually gone to watch Newcastle United women, and it's really nice. Like, they're a really good team, and even their manager follows me on Twitter. That's like the sort of level. But if it ever went to that level, I'd betray Manchester City women, and then I'd be like, see ya.
That's exactly what I want to hear.
Definitely.
So I have to say, you chose your team in the States based on who you thought was quite cute in Tobin Heath. I did it with mine with Utah Royals, in the fact that I really like Kelly O'Hara. So Kelly O'Hara is placed for the Utah Royals. That became my team.
There you go. See, there is a logic behind it. I think Portland Thorns, I watched a couple of their games. They're really, I think I described them in a podcast as really thorny. Like, they almost kind of, what is that word? Is that an onomatopoeia when you are the sound? Yeah. Like, it sounds like, they're really kind of really bitey team. They're really quite a punchy, vicious, like they're full of fire, and I quite like them. Also, their fans are mega, so they get like 25,000 fans going to watch them. They set off like flares. They've got like a massive. They're well known for their atmosphere, and they're the only team affiliated to their men's team. So they've got quite a lot of like conjoined support from like the men's club to the women's club, which is quite unique for the American League. So there's loads of things to love about them, but mainly Tobin Heath.
Okay, my missus is putting in. I'm just going to join in on the Thorns loving.
Okay, am I right or am I wrong?
You are so right. You're so right. I went over a couple of years ago. We went to a couple of games and it's incredible. And like the fans were so like welcoming and open and positive, and they do so much for their community. And yeah. Just as a whole unit, they're really, really good eggs.
Yeah, and I feel like the Portland Timbers, the men's team, are like behind the women's team.
Yeah,
and
completely.
Quite a lot of them. So if you look at Chicago Red Stars as another example, they often share a stadium with their men's team, which I can't remember for the life of me, but they play in the MLS, the Chicago Red Bulls or whatever. Anyway, the men's team and the women's team are in no way like affiliated to each other. And in fact, when I sort of put a thing online about it, like I wrote an article about it, loads of the fans were coming at me about it. Like, I don't want anything to do with that men's team. I don't want anything to do with them. And I was like, that's wild to me. Like West Ham as an example, like you should be proud that your men's club and your women's club are becoming more and more affiliated. I mean, Sorry to bring Manchester City back into Manchester City, the best example of it. Yep. They share the same academy. They like their stadiums are in each other's shadows. Like, isn't that wonderful? Do you not think that's an amazing thing? And in the American leagues, they're really like offended by it almost. But the Portland scene, it's like, they're a really nice affiliation with each other, and they work really hard to kind of champion each other, I think.
Yeah, and the thing is with Portland, it's like it is a soccer city. It's like they take pride in being a little bit weird, a little bit different from the rest of the US. So like that's a good thing, you know. I love Portland. But
you're making me so glad I chose Portland Thorns as my team.
Yeah. They're really, really good eggs. But yeah, I think because they've always been a soccer city, then to have a women's team there, they were just excited about it when they came around. So it's just been part of it. They just instantly became part of the family, I think, from what I can tell.
Yeah. And unfortunately, my co-presenter is an Orlando Pride fan. And so as many of you will know, anyone that follows anything I do, that's like Alex Morgan. That's mainly Alex Morgan. It's nothing against Alex Morgan per se, but
I have many things against Alex Morgan. So
semi-final. Let's not talk about tea today. No, it's I've got nothing against Alex Morgan per se, but it's just that it seems they kind of put her in the spotlight, and she really isn't. Well, firstly, they finished, I think, bottom last season or second bottom last season. And yet their star player, who played about three or four fixtures, scored one goal, gets nominated for Ballon d'Or. But
yep, no, that sounds about
nothing else to say about that.
No, Sonic's gone from Thorns to Pride, and then you guys have stolen my other love, Becky Sauber, and has gone over to
absolutely delighted. Yeah, there's been so many exciting transfer news. That's the one thing that's keeping our podcast going, our It's Not Soccer podcast, that the transfers are continuing, and it's really exciting. It's really juicy, I think, compared to the WSL. I think obviously we were just talking before we came on about Chelsea's big signing today, over the last couple of days. But in the NWSL, it's like constant, and there's just constant trade-off of players, but big players like Emily Sonnet, who's obviously a like worldwide known name in American soccer. So there's loads of juice when it comes to transfers. So that's keeping our podcast going.
That's why you've got to follow the American League, and we will touch on that towards the end. But we have to talk about the breaking news that's happened, which is regarding the Olympics, in the fact that both Canada and I know it's definitely Canada, and I think it might be Australia, have turned around and said they're not going to send anybody if the Olympics goes ahead later on this year. So I'll start with Emma. What do you think about that, that nations are now starting to pull out of the Olympics if it goes ahead?
Yeah, I mean, I read something before that it's looking more than likely now that there's going to be a postponement until next year, which I think is, let's be honest, the most sensible decision and the best sort of action that they can take. It's just a shame that obviously countries have had to take it into their own hands and, you know, make that decision to pull out rather than the committing themselves to delay it, move it, postpone it. You know, it's obviously such a shame with everything that's going on. You can obviously sense that their want, their need for the Olympics to go ahead, but it's the right decision. They need to postpone it, I think, most definitely. They're putting, you know, they need to first and foremost put everyone's well-being first ahead of everything else.
Helen, would you agree with that?
I mean, yeah, before I came on, guys, I was just saying that, unfortunately, I think I'm on the recovery road from having the coronavirus. And I can tell you right now that this is not something that I'd want my elderly grandmother to have or anybody around me. I think, like, joking aside, I think everybody needs to take it this very seriously. It's not the fact that it's the flu. It's the fact that it's incredibly contagious and literally 5 minutes or a passing glance with somebody that has it can be disastrous. So I just think that anything at the moment, like, sport is sport and we love it and we absolutely live for it, but right now this is so much more important. But yeah, I just basically echo everything Emma's just said.
Yeah, that's the problem, because I think Japan don't want to get rid of it. They are holding on with their bare hands, and I think they've got a clause in their contract that they could move it to the end of the year if it goes ahead. But as I think I was reading an article with one of our hammer throwers, and she was saying that they haven't been training because they've not been allowed to. They've not been allowed to go out. They've not been allowed to carry on the rigorous training they've been doing. So the Olympics can't go ahead this year, like, if they want a fair fight, because there's just no training.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the Olympians, they put so much into their training, don't they? And, you know, I think that was a lot of what was coming out today, is that, you know, we need a decision. We want it to go ahead because we've put so much into it. But, you know, it's time really for everyone to take stock of where we're at and the seriousness of this situation as well.
No, absolutely. But if they do postpone it next year, it means we've also got the men's Euros next year. And
there's going to be a lot going on, isn't there?
And possibly the women's Euros, unless they push them back. Which leads us nicely onto our next topic, which is they are talking about pushing the women's Euros back to 2022. Which, does that help or hinder Philip Neville in his quest to lead the Lionesses to greatness? Helen, you're shaking your head at me now. So I'm sure you've got a lot to say.
Helen's shaking her head. I've got my head in my hands.
I think first and foremost, like, this is not, let's not make this about Phil Neville. I think first and foremost, it's an absolute disgrace if they push the women's Euros back as a result of the men's Euros not being able to happen this year. That's my personal opinion. I think it'll be incredibly detrimental from a marketing perspective for the women's game. We have gone from almost obscurity in 2012 to slight knowledge of the game, 2 million viewers in 2015, to a record-breaking viewership in 2019. Like, we're on a roller coaster. Imagine, because of men's football, the people that stopped us from playing for 50 years in a position where we're not allowed to continue on this roller coaster. Like, I think my sister put it perfectly, was speaking about this the other day. If this was the other way around, it literally wouldn't even be spoken about. If it was the women's Euros in 4 or 5 weeks' time, it wouldn't even be mentioned. It wouldn't be like, oh, they're going to cancel that women's Euro. It just wouldn't be mentioned. They'd either go, oh, well, sorry, this year it's cancelled, sorry. Or they'd go, yeah, we're going to move it to, you know, September or something like that. They wouldn't care less. They just literally wouldn't care less. But the fact that it's the men, they're moving it to kind of disrupt the women's tournament when it's in our home country, To me, it's appalling. But I don't know whether I'm just climbing on my usual like angry woman train.
No, I'm always on that train. In the fact that as soon as I found out that the okay, Kate's in the locomotion at me now. After we said train, and that was slightly distracting.
I'm always on the angry woman train.
But as soon as they announced that the men's Euros were being cancelled, I knew for a fact that they would be talking about moving the women's. And people saying, "Oh, well, it won't affect it too much because it's gonna end just as the women's beginning." I'm like, "Yes, but you've got your final and your semi-final right around when the opening game at Old Trafford is supposed to be happening. Where's the focus going to be? Because the men's Euros final is supposed to be in Wembley, so it's the same country.
It's fine. England will have been knocked out by then. The men will have fucked up by then. It's fine. Don't worry
that
about
is
it.
Very true.
Sorry, I'm being I'm being really pessimistic, and I know that. And you know what? Actually, I'm not like anti-England men's. I get really behind it. I absolutely love the men's Euros. Genuinely, like. Oh my God, I was in Hyde Park crying on my knees and we got knocked out against Croatia. But this is more about the equality aspect of it. The fact is, if the shoe was on the other foot, it would not be adhered to in the way that it's being adhered to now. For me, I'm not actually that bothered about the fact that the men's Euros will be moved to next year and the women's Euros will remain next year. And I actually don't think it'll affect it that much. I think it'll, if anything, the women's Euros, hopefully it'll sort of liven the atmosphere. Hopefully it'll create a buzz around it. If we're entering the final stages of the men's tournament and the women's tournament is beginning, hopefully that'll spice it up a little bit and make it a little bit more exciting. I think Old Trafford will sell out regardless, yeah, personally, because I think that's where we're at. My big frustration will be if they go, "Oh, just cancel the women's. This is too much. Cancel the women's," or "move the women's aside for the men's." That's when it's like, this is, I don't know, Emma, am I being ridiculous?
No, I think you're right, because it's like taking steps backward, isn't it? Like, we've worked so hard to get here, and then, you know, there's just a lot of uncertainty, isn't there? And a lot to think about. There's so many elements to think about. And it near enough puts it in an impossible position of how it's going to happen. Essentially, it could be an incredible summer, you know, football all the way through the summer. But in terms of the logistics of it, I just can't see how it's going to work.
Yeah, that's the other aspect of it. I mean, physically, how will it work? If are you talking about crowd control, or are you talking about physically having enough bodies able to kind of manage this situation with Wembley and Old Trafford? Yeah. Or what, is that what you mean?
Yeah, like, it's almost maybe too much of an ask. I think if it wasn't to clash, then obviously it wouldn't be a problem. But with those few days where it does, it could potentially have an issue.
Why have they done that then? Why have they done that? Why don't they just push it back 7 days?
Yeah.
The women's tournament is set in stone.
That's the question. It doesn't make sense to have the clash. It just doesn't make sense. I mean,
it's thoughtlessness. That's what it is, though. It's just thoughtlessness. They've just not thought about the women because they never do.
They've not thought about the women. They've just come out, they've made the announcement about the men's, and essentially that's where the clash is. But it's, you know, there's not been really clear lines defined as to, right, this is what's going to happen, the men and the women, and this is how it's going to be. It's as if they've just sort of come out, said it, and then I don't know. You know what I mean? It kind of feels like, yes, the women's tournament has become a bit of an afterthought, but I think there will be a change there. Because yeah. I can't see any other way how it would work.
I'll be so disappointed if they push back the women's tournament to 2022 or whatever it'll be. I'll be gutted. Like, I know that's sounds very like melodramatic, but I'll be absolutely gutted.
No, I'm absolutely with you, because when they did the announcement of the men's, it was like, we will do our best for it to not affect the women's.
And I'm that's it.
They've filling me with hope.
They've gave the clause already. We will do our best, and you know, I don't expect that much. You can't expect that much from UEFA.
Do you know when you're just like, the balance has to shift? Like, at the moment, we're in a situation where we're trying to make up ground of like hundreds of years of being left in the dark. And we're in a situation where we're finally getting goalkeeping coaches. We're finally getting people supporting us with, you know, funding and paying people salaries and getting managers in and all of that sort of stuff. We're finally on that road. And it's like the balance has to shift in favor of women. It has to be a case of, okay, guys, right, you know, €1 men's competition isn't going to affect the marketing or brand awareness of men's football, but one tournament missed for women's football could set them back another decade. Should we, maybe we should like actually do something to help. Should we help the women a little bit? Like, you know, we've actually like really hindered them for a long, long time. Maybe we should start to help them a little bit, but they just won't.
It's all about the money.
It's so disappointing though, because you've probably just hit the nail on the head, and that's the reality of the situation of where we're at the moment, is that, you know, first and foremost, men's football does prevail over women's, and that is really pants without swearing, you know what I mean? And, you know, we're in an unprecedented, you know, we're just in such an uncertain situation, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how it does play out. But as it stands at the moment, you know, there's obviously going to be a lot of information that's going to be communicated as to where we're at, a lot of conversations that have yet to be had. And we're obviously going to have to bide our time and see what happens over the next few months, I think.
Yeah, it's scary times.
Do you think, though, if you look at the planning of the women's anyway, do you think there's been much thought into it? When you look at the stadiums that they've picked, for a fact that I love the Academy Stadium, Emma, please don't take me wrong, but it is not the biggest in the world, and you're having that as one of your main, you're having that as one of your main stadiums when you've got the Etihad across the road. You know, you've got stadiums down south that are literally next to each other with Southampton and Brighton. They're so close, and it's making travel. I know the UK is not the biggest country in the world, but travelling across it is not cheap for someone who goes down the M6 every other weekend.
For me, they've completely undervalued and devalued this tournament by, I think they'll easily sell out the Academy, 7,000 or whatever. They'll sell out, like Helen said, Old Trafford, easy. They could have had it at the Etihad, you know, they could have easily got 30,000, you know, for a game, I think. And I just think it's just, it's such a shame that they have undervalued sort of capacity wise in terms of the, in terms of what sort of attendees and what fans they can get in the stadium, because I think there will be a lot of interest.
Do you know what annoys me so much? Do you know what annoys me more than anything? It's the lies, because there's this lie that's come out that clubs didn't want involvement, or that clubs didn't potentially want to host. So for me, and I know that I've been online a lot about this, so apologies, because a lot of people already know this is my strong feelings about it. A third of the England squad come from the northeast of England. Now, obviously, as a Geordie lass, that's something that I like to spread a lot around. I don't know whether I mentioned Lucy Bronze is also from the northeast of England. Anyway, moving on. So a lot of the team are from the northeast of England. Now, they obviously hosted the Brazil game in Middlesbrough, and I know that a recent Sunderland Newcastle women's game, both of them in like the lower tiers of women's football, played at the Stadium of Light because the Stadium of Light wanted to host that game at like a 40,000 seat stadium. Now, you're telling me that the Riverside, who had its biggest sellout crowd for that England Brazil game, bigger than it had for Middlesbrough men's game in like decades, well, that's an exaggeration, but in a long, long time, they didn't want to host the Euros, like where they've seen. Do you know where I'm coming with this? Like, did you see what it brought to Middlesbrough when they hosted that England-Brazil game? Like, 30,000 people lined the streets, like, waiting for these clubs to come in. Like, it was huge. Like, they made such a massive thing out of it. Like, what that does for tourism to the area from all over the UK, but also from all over the world for that one friendly fixture. I don't understand why they would say, like, you know, Sunderland didn't want to host it, or I don't think Newcastle would have hosted it, if I'm being brutally honest, but that's just because our owners are swine. But like Sunderland, I bet you Sunderland would have taken that in a heartbeat, the Stadium of Light. And that's like, It's a massive stadium, and it's a hub of women's football. We're also talking, like, it feels to me, and maybe it's because I'm a northerner, it feels to me like the heart of women's football, you know, Dick Kerr Ladies, St. Helens, Sunderland, like these clubs, the heart of women's football, are kind of like forgotten. It's like they are part of the history of the women's game. And yet, if you want to watch England's journey through the Euros, I think almost 80% of the fixtures are like south of the Watford Gap. Like, yep. It's disgrace. Yeah. It's actually it's disrespectful. It's, yeah, I've been so moany this whole podcast, haven't I, so far? I'm just fuming about it because I think there's no representation in the northeast of England. I think the stadiums are too small. I completely agree with you, Emma. I think like places like the Academy Stadium, I think they're really well kitted out for the WSL. I love going there. Like, the food's amazing as well. Like, their pasta bakes are unreal. Yeah. No, true though, Emma, isn't it? The pasta bakes are
pasta bake, yeah. Love it.
They're also doing really good vegetarian pies.
Oh, they're banging. And they do free tea and coffee, so you can't go wrong there. But the stadium isn't kitted out for an England Germany friendly at Wembley where we had 75,000. It's almost like they forget that these, like, we do a friendly against Germany, a friendly, and we can sell out Wembley, or we can get close to selling out Wembley. And they think that the Euros, the actual Euros, the actual tournament, won't fill out a 7,000-seater stadium. Like,
they also seem to be forgetting travelling fans, because one set of games that me and I know Kate want to go see is the Netherlands. I would love to go see the Netherlands play. And the Netherlands always bring hundreds of thousands of travelling fans. Oh, if the Netherlands are playing someone in the Academy Stadium, there's going to be a riot if they can't get in.
Oh. I think they've been announced at Lee Sports Village, which is Manchester United's home ground. I don't know, Emma, did you go to Lee this season for the like Conti Cup or anything?
Yeah.
It's awful. Like, it's not the actual, honestly, no disrespect to the club or the fans or anything like that.
I was going to say, we're going to get the Barmy Army going after us at the moment.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I don't know. No, just getting there is hideous. It's like it's a trek from Manchester. It's not really near any transport lines. They do like, there's a bus route or something. People always come back and say there's a bus route. I'm like, try getting 30,000 Netherlands fans on a bus route to the Lee Sports Village. It's tiny. It's old. It's like a League Two stadium, League One stadium. It's not like, it's just not fit for purpose. It really isn't. And it's actually like quite insulting, because when it comes down to it, we know, the three of us know, we'll probably fill the stadium and more. So then they'll be like, oh, crap, this is not, I didn't see this come in. We've we've got 30,000 Holland fans.
Like, I don't understand that, because how can they underestimate the kind of crowds that they're going to, and the attention that they're going to draw for this tournament? That's what I don't understand. And like you said, it's not practical getting to Lee Sport Village for anyone. I mean, it's hard enough for me, and I live just half an hour away, you know what I mean? And it's difficult. Imagine, you know, like you said, if that's a Netherlands fan, or, you know, a Spanish fan, or, you know what I mean? Like, trying to get to that stadium and trying to work it all out logistically, how would you do that? Like, it's just impossible. Like, are they going to put transport on? You know, it doesn't make sense at all.
I think that what they're basing it on, and Tamsin and I talked about it when we did Two Girls World Cup, because we went out to France for the World Cup, and we were at the Norway game, the 3-0. Is it 3-0? We were at the Norway game for the quarterfinal, and it was brilliant. Like, almost, I'd say almost sold out, like 30,000. I think it was a perfect stadium. But I think that they're basing it on, and it was a nightmare to get to, by the way, and France was not set up for the World Cup at all. But one of the things that we noticed, I think that there's this thing where, like, they're comparing it, whereas England and France have totally different relationships to football. So I think in England, if you put a game on in Leeds and you say, oh, you know, we're bringing all the legends together, we're going to play all the Leeds legends against all of the Man United legends, you'll get, like, people lying in the streets for that. Whereas in France, they haven't got that relationship to football. They, like, haven't really, and it could be in any city in England, any city, and you'll fill a stadium for a decent football match, or for like a game that's renowned, you'll fill a stadium. And I think that when you look at France, I mean, me and Tamsin were walking down the street in France on the day of the quarterfinal, and we were going to the lady, where do we go? She's like, for what? We like the football. She was like, football? What football? We're like, it's a quarterfinal of the World Cup tonight. And you know, like that was the kind of, I don't know if either of you were out there for it, but yeah, that seemed to be the general rhetoric of the French people that we were meeting. They were like, didn't know there was a World Cup going on.
Yeah, there was little advertising as well, wasn't there, in around sort of, you know, where the fixtures were being held as well. So, yeah, like I think that was a lot of that to come back from the feedback from the World Cup was that people did say that, you know, is there a World Cup on? You know, because there was just nothing apart from probably the final in Lyon. You know, there was little.
But then, Le Havre really tried. They were the only city I went to because they were like, this is a great tourism opportunity. And they had banners and they had like everything, but nowhere else. I was in Paris for a USA game and it's the same thing, that it was like the USA versus Chile, one of the biggest games. And everybody's like, what are you on about?
Yeah, the year before, it was a couple of years before, I'd been for the men's Euros in Paris at the final against Portugal. And then my wife and I were like, the people lighting bins on fire. And it was wild. Like, honestly, you underneath the Eiffel Tower, you could not move for people. And it just, I know that that's different because it's women's football versus men's football and totally different marketing strategies and totally different brand awareness. But if you look at what it will be like in England for our first football home tournament in, well, since the World Cup, am I right? And since we host the World Cup in 66, am I right? that's a big deal, and the BBC will make a big deal out of it, and if it's anything like the World Cup, then we'll massively get behind our players and people will line the streets. They will. I have no doubts. So put that alongside a men's Euros, it's going to be like carnage.
To be fair to Lee though, they have started advertising it. They've got a little banner. It's last time I went. Cute.
To say they've got a little banner.
Oh dear, right. Moving on to, that was a very long topic. Moving on to our second topic. I know we don't want to bring it back to Phil, but we've got to a little bit because we are, after a very disappointing She Believes, and it was a very disappointing She Believes, we have dropped so many places compared to where we were when we won it last year. What have we got to do to get back to chasing the USA like we were when we were second? Because I can't see it at the moment.
I don't know.
Before I came on,
it's been so poor. It's not good enough, simple. I think this postponement either way has kind of saved Neville's bacon a little bit. Because I can't see him going. I really can't. I honestly think they're that stubborn that they're going to stick with him. I really do.
Is it stubbornness? Is it stubbornness or is it just complete lack of awareness?
I don't know.
Look at like the FA... If we were in a situation, it would just be on the front of every single newspaper. Like, if we look at, for instance, one of the most famous historic cases of people trying to get rid of an England manager was Sir Bobby Robson. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like, what he then went on to do, which I don't think Phil Neville will do, is he got the men unexpectedly to a semi-final of a World Cup. But at the time, the newspapers were like, get rid of him, get rid of him. They put so much pressure on the FA. It was almost unavoidable what was happening. It was like you could not, apparently, obviously, like I wasn't even alive, well, I was barely alive, but apparently the newspapers were just littered with like this, get rid of this man, like death threats sent to him and all sorts, because men's football was on the front of every single paper. It was on the front of every single person's mind, whereas I'm just not sure that they're aware like what, how far we have fallen in standard under this man. Like, I just don't think the FA have really paid attention Like, if they had, he would have been fired after we lost, or after our performances in the friendlies straight after the World Cup. They wouldn't have just called it a hangover. They would have been like, no, the actual performances themselves, if you compare them to the Mark Sampson era, the performances aren't as good, but the players are better. So, do you know what I mean? Like, we have three Lyon players, and we didn't under Mark Sampson. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So the players have progressed. But essentially, England as a team hasn't progressed with that. I mean, I think it's fair to say, if you were just looking at the results on paper, even if you were comparing it to the men's England team, that run of results, even going back through time, I don't think there's probably ever been as poor a run of results as, you know, with even the men's team. You know, where there have been issues with the men's team, they've almost acknowledged that there are problems and done something about it. I just don't understand with Phil Neville what it is about this guy that they seem so fixated on, that this is the person to carry this team forward, when all we've seen is, let's say, bog standard performances and him not being able to get the best out of the team, which we all know that they're more than capable of.
I think, like, when you look at who we've had, who we've got and who we've had over the last couple of years, in terms of our England squad, isn't it wild? Like, when you look at, like, the players that we've got, like, Lauren Hemp, I think, is probably one of the biggest shining lights to come out of this most recent tournament. I'm sure Emma will know every detail about it. But she's an absolute machine. Like, she's just fearless. She's so exciting. And the only thing I felt was sadness, because I just thought, this is your England future for the next few years. This is the person that will be, like, building you up. And what I did before coming on, because I knew we were going to be talking about Phil, is that I looked over the last two She Believes tournaments just to look at, like, so I wanted to look at the England win, I wanted to look at the England draw, the 2-2, the time that we obviously won the last tournament. But looking back at 2018, our opener was against France and we won 4-1. We just absolutely demolished them. And then France went on to draw against the United States. Like, this was an England team that scored goals. And you know how we did it? We scored goals by pressing the goalkeeper, by pressing the back four, by, like, pressing the defenders and being fearless. He's almost put fear into world-class players. Like, he's made, like, Millie Bright shit herself on a regular basis. Like, this is like a Chelsea legend, like Steph Horton, a Manchester City legend. And they're terrified. Like, this is the team we now have. And that was only 2 years ago. Like, England 4, France 1, and England, Germany 2-2. And then England lost 1-0 against the United States and as an own goal. And it was in the sort of second half of the game. They lost 1-0 against the United States to lose that tournament. And then the year after, obviously, we went on to win the She Believes tournament. We have drastically got terrible. And it's basically as a direct result of, we do not like pressing. We don't press anymore. We're too scared to press. We sit back. We drop back. We're trying to play ticky-tacky football, but it's not our team. It's not what we're known for. We want to do a high press. We want to be fearless. And that's all I have to say about that. Phil Neville out.
Yeah. Hashtag Phil Neville out.
Hashtag Phil Neville out.
Yeah. I've got to agree with that. I think it's just painful to watch, though. Like, I said, you know, we know, and do you know what else I find as well? A lot of the time, if we're watching games, or we'll call people out, we'll call players out, and we'll say, oh, you know, this game, you know, it was like the World Cup. We need Jordan Knobs. You know, it was Izzy Christiansen. Izzy at one point. You know, we've had Frank Kirby mentioned, you know, for this tournament. And, you know, it's always that one player, you know, but we should be able to, we've got quality players that are able to adapt. But I just don't feel that Phil is just setting us up right, or he's asking something really specific of the players that we're just not able to deliver. And that's down to his game management and his game preparation. And he needs to start taking accountability. You know, if he keeps saying things like that, what was he quoted to saying about our game, the way we play, non-negotiable, you know, that kind of things, like coming out saying things like that to the press. And then we're almost playing and not being able to adapt to the games, and he's almost like fixated on just doing the same thing all the time, and it's just frustrating to watch. And I just don't understand it at all, like why we feel that this is the guy to take us forward when he seems so set in his ways, and not, and clearly I think that shows his lack of that sort of technical ability, that tactician kind of role as a manager that, you know, you want.
It's like learning to adapt your style as a manager as well. Like, it's so typical of me to make this about Newcastle United. But as like Rafa Benitez, the only thing that really frustrated me about him is he never had the ability to change a formation to put two players at the front. So if we're losing 1-0 with 10 minutes to go, he would never ever go, oh, you know, screw this, let's put everybody on. And so we struggle to come from behind. Now, similarly, Phil Neville, there's nothing about him where he adapts his style. And what I said about that Japan game, was it the Japan game where we won in the last few minutes, was 1-0. Yeah. So in that Japan game, it was a hideous game because basically both teams were playing a similar style. Now Japan have to play that sort of style. They have to play drop back, quite defensive football, short passing, because of the strength of their players, because of the physical strength of their players, and the ability they have in the air isn't as good as ours. And then in the last 10 minutes, honestly, I said, they've literally gone against Phil Neville's instructions here. Like, you could just tell. It was like they've gone, oh, screw this, let's just start playing like we used to play. And so within 5 minutes, I think they just kicked about 5 or 6 balls into the box, and they were all getting cleared back out, and then they were just spraying balls at the goalkeeper. The goalkeeper made more saves in that 5 minutes than they did in the entire game. And then the goal came from a mistake, but that was the England style. Like today, watching England 2, USA 2, which you forget was actually not that long ago. Like it really was not that long ago. England 2, USA 2, Ellen White missed a sitter to make it 3-2. Like, Jodie Taylor, remember when Jodie Taylor could score goals? That is Phil Neville's fault. But these players had confidence. They just took shots from wherever they wanted. They just had a go. They just sprayed balls into the box. They were just fearless. Like at one point, Nikita Paris just absolutely does Crystal Dunn. She's like, see you later, Crystal Dunn. When was the last time you saw Nikita Paris actually screw an opposition player over in an England shirt? Not under Phil Neville. Like, in the Lyon shirt, she's fantastic. But in an England shirt, she's terrified. Like, she can't, like, she's scared to shoot. She scores this goal against the USA, and she's just fearless. She just, like, absolutely does Crystal Dunn. They chip the ball over the top. It's just simple, like, get the ball in the box and have a go. And that England have lost that. They're so terrified.
I'm going to say something really controversial here. Do you think there's a level of complacency amongst the current Lionesses, being like, it doesn't matter how I perform, I'm still going to get picked? Because you kind of saw that with Steph, and you kind of saw it with Millie. They didn't have the greatest tournament, and he only rested Steph for that last game. So is there a level of complacency amongst the team where it's like, nah, it doesn't matter what I'll do, I'll still get my shirt?
I don't think so, really. I mean, Steph is, you know, obviously well established. She's number. I'm not gonna do it. But you know, I think what we see is a lot of transition, and he does swap it around quite a lot, especially on that back four. And our opportunities in playing and having those games are fairly limited, and they'll be even more so limited now. So in terms of like moving forward at this point, every game that comes along for England, I just think, right, this is the one. We're going to turn it around. We're going to put everything behind us and just start again. And, it, you know, I look at the team sheet, I look at the, you know, the squad that Phil's announced and who he's taking with him. And I think, yeah, this is a good squad, you know, and with the youth that he brought in for the She Believes, I thought brilliant. You know, we're going to see, you know, him give some youngsters some opportunities to show us what they can do. And, you know, that was exciting, I think, for everyone. I think everyone agreed it was good to see that, you know, that youth come into the mix along with the experience, and that hopefully, you know, we'll see some positives, let's say, to carry, you know, the next few months forward into Tokyo, especially, you know, to see sort of who he might have in mind for that. But I think he just needs to go now. Like, I was quite happy to stick with him at the beginning, you know, when give the guy a chance, you know, essentially, you know, he's worked under Alex Ferguson, for God's sake, you know what I mean? He's, you know, if anybody, you know, he's one of the best managers in the world, surely he'd take something from that that he can apply to his own game. I mean, obviously he's going to have his personal style, but I mean, but I've just not seen anything to convince us. And like you said, I think the steps backwards that we've made is enough to say, right, how much of this, how much more of this are we going to take? And it really is time for the FA to just suck it up now and just make a defiant decision as to his future, because I can't see him really improving this squad now and getting the best out of him. Because I think when is the point you start to say, right, this guy's had enough opportunities now, you know, we've come out of the World Cup, all right, we did well to get to the semi-final, it was disappointing, but you know, this headache, this hangover that we've all been suffering, the fans have been suffering, you know, how long is it going to go on for? And we keep talking about it, and every time it comes round, we keep saying, you know, it's bright, it's, you know, there's positives and all this. But let's be honest, even the wins that we've seen under Phil Neville, they've not been very convincing. We've been lucky, you know, we've not won convincingly. They've been, you know, scrappy goals or, like Helen said, mistakes. And that's not the England side that we're, you know, have been used to watching these last, you know, year, you know, these years where they've been absolute top quality and up there fighting and challenging with the best.
I don't think it is anything about complacency from the England players. Like, I don't think any England, I think firstly, the first thing worth noting, and it's the biggest difference, I think, between men and women's football, is international is huge for female players. Like, it's the bread and butter of women's football. So, like, they're not going to want to come and play football and be like, oh, well, it is what it is, we're lost again. Like, oh, this isn't good enough. Or they, you know, this is the most important time of their year. Even, I would say, even going to the She Believes friendly tournament is at times bigger than, you know, playing Bristol City at home in for their league club or whatever. And I know that might seem really unfair, and I'm not with any disrespect to the WSL, but for these players, pulling on that England shirt is everything they've ever dreamed of. So I don't think Steph Horton or Millie Bright or anyone is complacent in pulling that shirt on. I think this is purely down to saying to a player like Millie Bright, hey, Millie Bright, every skill that you have, every facet that you have as a player, I want you to basically go with every opposite facet of everything you're not good at. And that's what I need you to have as your strengths. It's like he wants them to play this style of football. Like, he wants them to play a style of football where Millie Bright is a big... She's the player that this season, if either of you remember, scored that incredible assist, because basically from the back, she just lobbed the ball forward 50 yards, and she put it straight into the path of Beth England, if I recall. Yep. It might have been, was it G or Beth England? I can't remember. Beth England, who scores a worldie, and it was like probably going to be one of the goals of the season. And that is Millie Bright's strength. Her vision, her strength, her physicality, and her height, her ability to head the ball away. That is not any of the facets that Phil Neville's looking for in this squad. And yet he has a player in the England squad that has all of the facets that he's looking for, that hasn't got a game in the World Cup, and is now playing at right back in Lucy's absence, which is Leah Williamson. So it's almost like he's clueless, because he's trying to play a style of football, which I'm like, okay, you're trying to play that style of football, I get it, go with it, roll with it. And then he's like picking all the wrong players to play that style of football. So you're trying to play tiki-taki football with one of the best strikers in the world who can score a goal you know, from wherever you want on the pitch, just by putting the ball at her feet, and yet you're giving her one or two opportunities a game. Like, what's going through your head? And then you've got like a midfield of players that don't have that ability except for Kira Walsh. Like, Jill Scott isn't that player. No offense, Emma. She's not that player. She's incredible in the air. She's got the ability to spray the ball wide. She's got the ability to put the ball in the back of the net if you from corners or whatever. She's not that short pass player, really. Like, she's not that linking player. Like, I just think he's got it all wrong. I think he's clueless. I think he always has been clueless. And I think it's been covered up for a long time by the fact that we have an England team that are full of ability. We have some of the world's best players. And he really needs to go. But I don't think he'll walk because I don't think he can get another job anywhere else. am I a bitch? Yes, I am.
I think as well, another thing, though, as a manager, you know, you reflect on performances and all this, but... you know, we're making the same mistakes, you know, every time. You know, when's it going to stop? You know, when do you say, like, enough is enough? Like, it is so frustrating. And even, like, now, I mean, obviously the tournament's been finished a few weeks now, but even now, just talking about it, that that anger is really resonating, I think, through a lot of people.
Am I hiding well? It's just like, you know, with I think Manchester City men are a really good example of this. When Pep Guardiola came in, their first season, they didn't do that well. And every Manchester City fan knew it was a process. They were like, right, this is what will happen. He's going to bed in. He's going to make his decisions. What's he doing spending all that money on wing backs? This is so obscure. And then what happened? They went on to destroy everyone. And like, that's really been implemented in the Manchester City women's team. The massive difference, though, is that Manchester City men can buy whoever they want from wherever they want in the world because A, they have the money, and B, it's not an international team. Whereas England women, he's got a pool of players that have a level of ability, and he comes into that group of players and he's going, I want you to do something that none of you are really capable of doing and should be doing with what your style is. Like, we got to a semi-final knocked out by an unfortunate own goal. Poor Laura Bassett will never live it down. But that tournament, we were excellent, and it was all through like grit and fight and determination and pressing the back line, and that's what we were. That was what the England team were. It was kind of like, sorry to be, I sound really patriotic here, but it was kind of like a very English way of doing it. It was just like, yeah, get stuck in, get the ball in the box, put the ball in the net. And players like Jodie Taylor thrived off that because he gave her opportunities and just scored goals. But when you give a striker less opportunities and you're like, right, you're only getting two or three opportunities a game, that's when they start cocking up. Because when you give them less opportunities, there's more pressure on them to score in that one opportunity that they get. So players like Jodie Taylor, who got a golden boot, if you recall, at the last Euros, she's like now, you know, fallen off a cliff because she's not, like, she just doesn't get those opportunities in every game. And I just think, he's seen this pool of England players, he's trying to make them into something that they're not, and as a result, like, look at us, where, like, who are we? We deserve to be sort of 15th, 16th in the rankings, honestly. We're like, it's terrible.
So, I mean, you say that he's learnt under Alex Ferguson, you'll also forget that his last manager he learnt under was David Moyes, and as a West Ham fan, it makes lots of sense.
I forgot about Moyesy.
Crazy.
Right, we're going to end on something really positive and fun right now. So we are going to talk about the possible transfer between the American leagues and the British leagues. Who do we think would do in either ones? We're going to start from transferring over from the States. Who do we think should come over to the English league? Where should we put them and how will they thrive?
What?
Yeah.
Anyone?
Yeah, absolutely anyone. Put them in any team.
Tobin Heath to Newcastle United women's.
I'm down for it. And let's not say Chelsea. Chelsea have got enough players. We don't need any more players at Chelsea.
They're going to get a transfer ban soon.
That's squad. Can't get my head around that. I love Lavelle, Rose Lavelle, I think. top quality. I'd love to see her. I think
her and Georgia Stanley should switch.
Yeah,
she should go out.
I'm gonna have her at City, obviously. But you know, we've had a couple of players from the NWSL. We've had Carly, haven't we? And we've had Nadia come from Portland.
Alex, didn't you? Have you had Alex Morgan?
No.
Chelsea had Alex.
Oh, was she? Oh, was she came into one team? She played for Lyon for a bit as well, didn't she?
Yeah, and like Ali Long played one game for Chelsea.
Yeah, Ali Long. I think.
Crystal Dunn go to, did she go to Chelsea for a bit?
Yeah.
Did she?
Yeah.
Oh my God, imagine Crystal Dunn at Chelsea. I think she'd fit in right well in London. I could imagine her in Fulham.
I remember watching her, and I don't think she used to get as much game time as perhaps what she deserved, but she's playing really well. Like, she was one player in the She Believes that really impressed me, Crystal Dunn.
I think that the standout and the player that I'd love to see in the WSL is Julia. It would never happen because she's so settled, and she's obviously married to an NFL player. But it would be amazing to see Julia. She's, I think, was the standout of the She Believes. Imagine her in like the current depleted Arsenal squad. Imagine her just lending a hand. Arsenal are the only team that are delighted by this coronavirus. They're like, whoo, enough time for it.
That's so true.
Yeah. I know. I thought we could have taken them if we were playing them this weekend.
Yeah.
They had like
I think they've got about 14 players. I think they've got a bench. Yeah, I'd love to see Julia to Arsenal.
Do you think Arsenal would have actually like said, like, we can't front a team for that fixture? Because isn't there a rule where it says, like, if you've got so many players out to injury or illness that you can actually, there's something in the rules that says if you can't put out a team, then they can, like, not forfeit the match, but, you know, postpone it.
Yeah, we did it at the beginning of this season against Everton.
Yeah.
We had a bout of flu, which now could have been not flu, running around our team. And first game back after Christmas, we had to postpone it.
Yeah.
But if it's like, surely they could dip into their sort of under 23s or whatever, or their youth squads or whatever to get bench players. But actually, seeing the squad, I think they were on about 9 first-team players.
It just makes me think, because their last feature, their bench was really quite short. They didn't have that many options, did they?
They just need Miedemar. Just put her on her own. Her and Lisa Evans, and you're sorted. Like, Lisa Evans is like the kind of rock in the middle, and then Miedemar up front. Happy days.
Side.
So what player do you think from our league that would do well over in the States? Because we've also had Claire Emsley go over for Orlando Pride, and there's a beautiful clip of her doing over Rapinoe. It's in one of the matches, and Rapinoe's going after her, and she just does this brilliant footwork and just goes around her, and Megan's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
She just won the W League as well, didn't she? Because I didn't know until recently that quite a lot of the time the NWSL players kind of do their off season in Australia, and they play in both leagues, so they kind of have like sister clubs, I guess. So she just won W League. Claire MC's mint. She's such a good player.
Yeah. Jodie Taylor does that, doesn't she?
Yeah. Jodie Taylor, she's, to be fair, she's not getting that many minutes, but she does quite well for Reign. Like, she's a little bit of a rock for Reign, and they're not a bad team at all. Who would I love to see over in the NWSL from the WSL? It would be cool to see. Cool to see. Yeah, I know you're saying that as a City fan. I'm saying this as a neutral. It'd be cool to see. It would be cool to see Miedemar playing in the NWSL. It would kind of help with the kind of old. We're actually releasing a podcast this week called The WSL versus the NWSL. So it might actually already be out. And it would kind of help to solve that age-old argument. Like, Sam Kerr comes over to our league. Miedemar goes over to their league. Which league is better? Let's find out. Seems like a good way to solve it, right?
Yeah.
I asked them 11 to go, but yeah.
I just like to see Miedemar go so we can Give somebody else a go at it. You
are so selfish.
I'm not. I think I think it's always a good opportunity for a young player. I wouldn't want to see her go to America, but I mean, sort of, you know, in terms of, you know, what they can get for it and how they can add that to their game, you know, for a player like Lauren Hemp or, you know, Georgia Sanway, maybe to go over and just to learn off, you know, like you said, there's some quality players in the NWSL, some real legends of the game, and, you know, it would be a fantastic opportunity, I'm sure. I mean, it was great to, you know, when Claire went over to Orlando, though we were sad to see her go, the opportunity that that sort of bought her in terms of, you know, adding to her game. And I think she has just excelled. I think it's done her good. And I think when you see that, it kind of makes it worthwhile. I would love to see Claire Emsley come back to the WSL League. I think she's a quality player, like you said. She's got so much skill to her game. And I think that move has really benefited her. It would be good to have her back one day, maybe.
I think it can be make or break. Like Rachel Daly, I think it was the best thing that ever happened for her. Firstly, yeah. She went out there as a right back or a centre back, and now she sort of scores goals for fun. Like she can play, she's so versatile, she can play in three or four different positions. And the NWSL is quite funny because they're really like a bit obscure with formations. Like sometimes when at the beginning, you know, when they bring up like the formation on the screen, it's like 1-2-3-5-1-2, like the lineup looks really obscure and all over the place, but they haven't quite got formations down. They don't do it in the same way we do, where often it's 4-3-3 or 4-5-1. And Rachel Daly, it's actually worked wonders for her. Jodie Taylor, I think she was a better player before she went out to the NWSL, but I don't think it's hindered her too much, but I do think it has a little bit. But I could see someone like Chloe Kelly from Everton absolutely thriving in the NWSL, because I think that because she's fit, she could do like all of the fixtures and the travelling, because quite a lot of travelling involved. And I think that she would really thrive in that league, and I think it would be the making of her. Whereas at the moment, so for instance, that last 10 minutes she came on for England, I think she was an absolute breath of fresh air. But I think at the moment she'd really struggle to get minutes, and maybe going over to the NWSL might differentiate her from, you know, the Ellen Whites and the Beth Englands, who at the moment are playing for two dominant teams in the WSL, and yet she's keeping up with them on goals. And for an Everton team, which are decent, but nowhere near Manchester City and nowhere near Chelsea. So, yeah, I think that someone like Chloe Kelly over in the NWSL playing for a Sky Blue, maybe playing alongside Rachel Daly at Houston Dash, might do wonders.
So you took that also seriously. In my head, I was just like, I want to see Jilly go over just to see them try and understand her.
Can you imagine Tony Duggan? Maybe that'll be Tony Duggan's next move. She loves moving around, doesn't she, old Tony?
Yeah, she'll probably go to Orlando because she likes the sun.
Yeah, that's true. She could get. She wouldn't need fake tan. She'd be all good.
She'd save a fortune.
She'd save a fortune.
Right, I have a final question for Helen specifically. Marta versus Daly, do you think we're going to see another clash this season?
Bloody hope so, because it'll get us a lot of listeners. For anyone that doesn't know, there was a bit of an awkward clash where Marta's an absolute hothead. She's amazing to watch, especially in league. She kind of really takes the league very seriously, whereas a lot of the US players have a tendency not to. And that's just the truth. It's just how it is. A lot of them like skive the games and stuff. And her and Rachel Daly have a real, like, there's a real thing between them. And apparently it's because Rachel Daly's girlfriend and Marta had an argument once, got someone sent off or whatever. Anyway, they randomly get in this fight and Marta rips the corner flag out and is like trying to spear Rachel Daly. This is not an exaggeration. This is literally what happened. Go and YouTube it, Marta versus Rachel Daly, and you'll see the footage for yourself. But yes, I am hoping this season, Orlando Pride versus Houston Dash, there will be another Marta versus Rachel Daly. What I love is Rachel Daly's so Yorkshire about it. She's like, come for me. come for me. She's just so like her outside a nightclub with a kebab in her hands. Like, you want me? Come and get me.
And on that joyful note, I'm going to let these lovely ladies go. Thank you again to Emma for joining us. And thank you again, Helen. Hopefully we can get you back very soon.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
I'm going to keep doing this more work and kick Reese out. So thank you very much, guys.
Cheers, bye.
See you later.